from the Gothic Quarter in Barcelona. This is Market Movers, the podcast that gives you a closer look at the financial markets to trade responsibly. Here are your hosts, Lior Cohen and Yochai Elam.
Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us, clicking the subscribe button and telling about us to a friend, family member, or a coworker. This is episode number 32, recording on Thursday, January 8th. I'm your co-host, Lior Cohen, and joining me, he's still bummed out that the ECB won't convene this week, Yochai Elam. How's it going, Yochai?
Hi, Lior. I'm doing great. Luckily for us, we have other events in the Eurozone, which are moving the Euro quite a lot. We don't need Draghi anymore. Oh, please come back. Please come back. Oh.
Yeah, well, he'll come back at the end of the month, so you'll have to wait patient till the rate decision and see whether or not there are any surprises. But this week, we'll take a look at Venezuela and falling oil prices, analyze the plunge in the euro, including the latest from Greece, France, and news about the deflation and ECB's QE, and review the recent minutes of the FOMC. And finally, if time allows, we'll look at the US labor market. But first, Venezuela. Okay, so Yochai, Venezuela isn't doing so well recently, right?
Yeah, it's just too dependent on oil. It has been giving oil for free to Cuba, and it hasn't stabilized its situation, and didn't diversify away from oil, and with the fall in oil prices, it is in trouble.
All right, and you talk about its dependency. You want to take a guess just what the percent of oil from its total products that it exports? What's the share of oil?
I would say above 50%.
88%,
wow.
Sir. That's if we include crude oil and refined petroleum. Only crude oil accounts for 65%. And Venezuela, as you well know, is one of OPEC members. It produces roughly 2.3 million barrels per day. So nearly 8% of OPEC and 2.5% of total global output. One of the problems that Venezuela has, as we said, oil prices are going down, but we had oil prices coming down back in 2008. But the thing is that now Venezuela's condition is much more dire than it was back in 2008-2009. If you look at, for instance, their debt, the GDP to debt, you'll see that the GDP contracted in the past several months, in several quarters, in the first quarter by 4.8, the second quarter 4.9, and in the third quarter 2.3%. Its current debt to GDP is roughly 50%. Back in 2009, it was 26%. So you can understand that on the one hand, they have growing debt, the GDP continues to contract, and oil prices continue to plunge. And now they are around $50, and some even estimate they might even go even further down than that. On top of it, you also have that they also peg their currency to the US dollar. And you know, Yochai, what happens when you peg to the US dollar? It's not going to end well.
Yeah, we had the case of Argentina in the previous decade. It didn't end well. And I'm sure there's quite a big black market over there at Caracas for US dollars. I know there's a shortage of some basic goods, such as, food, diapers, basically anything that comes from outside. So it's deteriorating.
Yeah, and if you talk about the black market, even though the Venezuela Bolivar is pegged to the US dollar at 6.3 in a couple of years or so, in recent weeks it has been a little less stable than before. Even more so when you talk about the black market, it's now around $1 will fetch you around 89 to 90
wow.
Bolivars.
Just totally different
on
world.
On the border in Colombia. Yeah, so if we talked about Argentina in a recent episode about how they have the blue rate, which is roughly 50% premium over the Argentinian peso, well, it's a whole different story for the Venezuela Bolivar. It's like almost over 15, roughly 15 times what the official rate is. So that's like, how can you live in this economy with also roughly 60% inflation? So that's like, that's not going well.
No, the level of crime has gone up in recent years. And in addition, people who can live outside of Venezuela just do that. I can say from my anecdotal evidence here in Spain that whoever has a bit of money, a bit of education, just moves out of the country. So we often focus on Russia with the current oil crisis, but it's important to note Venezuela, fall of the regime there could have implications on other currencies, other places in the world as well.
Currently, what they're trying to do is obviously trying to stabilize it, and Nicolas Maduro, the president, said that he plans to make some changes to the country's exchange rate system, but so far he didn't provide any more details about what these changes and implications will be. Also, he recently announced that they'll get $20 billion from China as an investment, but it won't go to necessarily go to pay off debt, of course, or to imports. It will be interesting to see where the chips will fall on Venezuela. And for now, bondholders are probably scrambling around to see whether or not it will default. Only a month ago, news outlets reported that the probability of default has gone over 90% based on the CDSs. Pretty crazy for that. Yeah, it's very interesting to see that Venezuela is in a very dire position now, and it all could also mean opportunity. I mean,
when there's blood on the streets, it's time to buy.
Exactly. I think we'll review it again, Venezuela, when if there'll be any news, any big news coming out of it, maybe changes in the exchange rate. So that'll be something that'll be interesting, and we'll review it again. Okay, but let's go back to the main news items of the week, and starting off with the falling euro. So Yochai, we had the euro plunging down, and everybody are scrambling around fearing about the deflation. So is that really news? I mean, deflation, really?
Well, it isn't news, but expectations were for a slide to just around flat, and the 0.2 fall in prices was sort of the final stamp that convinced everybody that QE is indeed coming on January 22nd. So the actual event of, well, it was the number for December, but actually for the whole of 2014, it's the year-on-year number, and prices actually fell over the year. Now, there was a silver lining. Core inflation actually ticked up from 0.7 to 0.8%, but this wasn't enough to stop the trend. And we have euro dollar at the time of recording at 117.87. 117 was the launch rate of the euro back in 1999, so we've gone a long way down.
So we're going back in time, and but come on, I don't agree to that notion that we have the deflation, and come on, oil prices have gone down, so obviously we're going to see the general inflation dipping down. To make a big move out of it, I think it's maybe a little bit too irrational exuberance from the markets, because core inflation, as you said, ticked up a little bit and remains pretty stable and has been for quite a while. So isn't that more important to see where actual inflation is going rather than the general inflation?
Yeah, so the problem is for the ECB is that its only mandate is headline inflation. It has to be 2% or a bit below. And with unemployment at 11.5% and a general lack of demand in the eurozone, there is great fear that falling oil prices will trickle down, if you wish, to other prices, and will eventually also push core inflation lower. It's not the Fed that doesn't even look at core inflation, but the core PCE price index. It's the ECB that actually raised rates in 2011 when oil prices went up. So now it had all the reasons to cut interest rates, and it has the reasons now to introduce a new policy, quantitative easing, to push the euro even lower.
Yeah, okay. So before we go to quantitative easing, I think this is just the point I was trying to make, because when oil prices went up in 2011, they raised rates. That was a bad move to do it then. In the same sense, it will be a bad move to make any changes because of the so-called deflation. I'm not saying that they're not supposed to go that road of QE. I'm just saying not because of the so-called quote-unquote deflation, because I don't see it. I think that when oil prices go down, obviously they'll take the general inflation down, but I think it's more a matter of looking at the core inflation and not at the general.
The ECB looks to Japan, and where we had early signs of deflation that were ignored, and then the country was stuck in the deflationary mindset where people delay buys, and when people don't have too much money in their pockets anyway, they would want to delay buys even more. I mean, that's what Draghi is thinking or what the most ECB members think. The Germans don't share that kind of opinion, and they've been opposed to that, but I think now they're in isolation.
Let's talk about that. I heard from a recent, there were some certain economic data that were pretty promising for the Germans, and this is why they're continue to oppose to the QE, basically, or what?
In general, Germans don't fear deflation, they fear inflation. So when prices in Germany are plus 0.2% or something like that, that's really good news for the German consumer, for German politicians, and for everybody in Germany, especially when recent data shows that unemployment fell to the lowest level since the early 90s, just after the reunification. So at 6.5%, the minimum wage has gone up, just now in 2015 in Germany. So everything looks relatively positive there, and they don't see a need for extreme moves. But it's the European Central Bank and not the German Central Bank. Unemployment is 11.5% in the Eurozone and not 6.5% in Germany.
So you think that actually for now, coming January 22nd, you think that the ECB will be more likely to actually put forward into motion the QE program and everything, and it'll have a little bit more to talk about?
Yeah, regarding some details about the QE program, of course, what's important is the number. 500 billion euros is the sum that's sort of middle ground. I think the market is consolidating around that number. If we get a higher number, it's more euro negative. If we get a smaller one, it's could be euro positive at this point, when it's probably already priced in. And the details are also important. If the ECB does it directly or delegates it to the national central banks, in any case, it'll be proportional to the GDP. That means in case of German bond yields, they're already extremely low at around 0.5%. I think markets have been anticipating this. But the idea that when the ECB begins buying, this money will, of course, flow away, might reflate some assets and hopefully reach the real economy. The fall in the price of the euro, which we were already seeing, is helpful to the local economies, and another fall would be also cheered, I think, by many countries.
Yeah, by the way, I'm just starting to read the book about all the QE programs and the recent recession. It's by Richard Koo, named The Escape from Balance Sheet Recession and QE Trap. And I won't go over detail, maybe I'll go over it in a future episode when I actually read the entire book. But for now, what he's trying to say is that basically all these QE programs won't work. The only way to actually make a dent in the current slowdown of the economy is by fiscal policy and not by monetary policy. So, and he just takes as an example that if you look at also Japan, but US, that they've implemented QE programs, and on the one hand, you saw that money base has gone substantially up, but if you look at the actual loans that the banks give out to households and firms, it's gone a little bit up, but a very, very slow pace, not near as close as the money base. So, and he tries throughout the book to show us that this is what he's going at, and because the economy, most of these large economies, Europe and in the US, they have a lot of debt, households have debt. This is the problem of actually spending if you cannot get a loan from the bank, and the bank doesn't even bring it out. My question is to you, Chai, so you think that the QE will actually have some positive impact on the Eurozone economy, will actually help to revive it, or you're more into side of Richard Koo?
Well, I think it will help because it'll push the value of the euro lower. And that's good for exports and also for the ECB's inflation target. So that's the only thing that QE will bring. Now, I do agree with him on the need for fiscal policy. But first of all, Germany is still very strict about austerity. And it's very hard to agree on anything in the Eurozone. So we have one body with one significant leader, the ECB with Mario Draghi, who can actually deliver policy. So a lot of policy making has been delegated to central banks. It's very clear in the Eurozone. And I think if fiscal policy had been made in the past, maybe we would not need QE. But as the basically the only body willing and ready to act, that's what we have.
All right. And turning from the QE programs, we also had a little bit of news from Greece, right? So there's also something that pushed down the euro?
Sure. So in Greece, I'll just make a quick recap. They had to elect a new president in parliament, and the government brought this decision forward because it wanted to sort of show its confidence. This move failed, and between Christmas and New Year's, we had the third vote for the president in parliament, and the failure of this vote meant that Greece is going to new general elections, even though the president is just a figurehead role. So now we have elections on January 25th, just 3 days after the ECB. It's on a Sunday. Currently, the anti-bailout, anti-austerity party Syriza, the radical left party, is leading, but with a narrow margin. In Greece, the party that wins the largest number of votes gets an extra 50 out of 300 seats in parliament. There is, of course, fear that Greece will renegotiate its debt, leave the eurozone, and things like that. So every opinion poll becomes more and more important as we get closer to the date. Now, there's been some rattling from Germany that they could manage an exit, a Grexit, if you wish. And then on the other hand, they said that they might be willing to speak to Greece about renegotiating its debt. So we have all these mixed headlines. Of course, they're causing more volatility. I think eventually it's not as scary as it is. Either the current government of Samaras, New Democracy, the center-right, will win by a narrow margin. And if Syriza wins, they will not make any extreme policy. They will sit down with the Germans, with the IMF, and find some compromise. But for markets, it means a lot of volatility. We are grateful for that, I think.
Yeah, but on a little bit harsher news, they have a little bit. We had news from Paris about the terror. Do you think that also have some implications on the euro?
Just on the sidelines, I think the QE deflation story is the biggest one. Greece is trailing a bit behind, and terror in France, in Paris, which was terrible, and they had some consequent events, which are, at this point, it isn't clear if they're related or not. But this attack on the press was sort of a shock for France, a shock for the Eurozone, and had also a little bit of a negative impact on the Euro. At this point, it doesn't have a big impact, but if we have more acts of terror, either in France or other Eurozone countries, and it becomes an ongoing story, I think it could also weigh. But at this point, it's still more in the news section than in finance.
And turning from the recent events in Europe, we'll move back to the U.S. and the recent FOMC minutes were released. So did it surprise you? Did it have any big headlines coming out of it? I didn't see any much of a market reaction to it.
Yeah, it was sort of a non-event this time, unfortunately. It was very, very balanced, very repetitive of what we've seen in the meeting itself back in December. So the only important point to take out of this, as I see it, is a willingness of the Fed to raise rates, even if core inflation remains at current levels. And that means that they're not afraid of oil prices trickling into core inflation, contrary to the Eurozone. Everything is set to go as planned, of course, data dependent. But I thought we would get some kind of more dovish balance to Yellen's hawkish comments, especially on oil, and we didn't get that. We got a repetition, so it continues supporting the dollar. We did not see any immediate action, but the minutes kept on supporting the US dollar.
Yeah, I will want to point out that something that I caught my eye, this is from the minutes, some participants emphasized that policy will still be highly accommodative for a time after the first increase in the federal fund rates target, given the difference between the current setting of the federal funds rate range and the committee's view of the long-run normal rate, as well as the Federal Reserve's elevated holdings of longer-term securities. Obviously, it's only some participants, so it's not all of them, but it's still something that could suggest that we'll maybe have a first rate hike and then it will be a little bit slower than what we previously estimated or something like that?
It's hard to tell because I think we'll get the first rate hike in June, and from now until then, the data-dependent thing will be even more important. So I think we'll see a series of rate hikes, but it'll take time until they begin winding down QE. I mean, not only stopping to buy bonds, but actually letting them mature or even selling bonds. And I don't think interest rates will reach high levels like they were in the past, but I think we will get a series of rate hikes until the end of the year. You think they'll settle for one rate hike and then pause?
No, I'm not saying one rate hike, but I think maybe they won't actually necessarily start to raise after the first rate hike. They won't necessarily do it like every meeting, maybe every other meeting or something like that. That's what I take from this paragraph at least. But we don't know how many of them are, so it could be only like two people and that's it. So they could be a minority. But I think that this is something that some of the Fed members actually contemplated and they threw it out there. Maybe it'll catch on. We'll see in future FOMC minutes if there's actually some traction to this suggestion. Okay, so turning from the FOMC, we're left with the non-farm payrolls. So we're recording it on Thursday, so we'll release tomorrow on Friday, on the day the episode is published. So the current expectations is around 240,000, 241. Well, let's take a guess. Yohai, what's your guess on it? What's going to be?
I'll go for around that number. I'll go for 250. It seems like a round number. That's my guess. What's yours?
I'm going lower, 220. Going 220. And speaking of it, so what do you think? As usual, the expectations are around 240. If it'll go, around 250 and above, you will see US dollar going sharp up.
I think that's a bit too close, but if it'll be above 280,000 and, of course, yet another 300,000+, it'll be, of course, a dollar positive. If we'll get what you said, 220 or lower, we could see the dollar fall. The Fed might push back on rate hikes. The market might think that. But, of course, as we've talked before, it's not only the one number which goes wild from time to time, but also the other figures, especially wages.
Yeah, that's very important. I think we'll talk about it next week after we'll get the reports. We'll talk a little bit more about detail. Not only, we're not going anywhere with that. We're going to talk about the hourly rates, the U6 versus the general unemployment rate that everybody quote. We'll talk about the quitting rate. They have a lot of issues to talk. So yeah, I think we'll tackle it next week. And that's it. That's our show for this week. Thank you as usual, Yohai.
Thank you, Lior. Have an excellent 2015.
Yeah, have an excellent 2015 back at you. And thank you all for listening. If you like our show, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. You can subscribe to the show via Stitcher, email, RSS, or iTunes, whatever suits you fancy. So until next week, this is Lior signing up for Yohai, saying have a great week and invest responsibly.
This podcast should be used for educational, research, and informational purposes only and does not constitute investment advice. There are no guarantees expressed or implied of future positive returns in regard to the subject matter contained herein. Understand the risks inherent in investing before making the decision to invest or consult an investment professional for more information. Reasonable due diligence has been performed in regards to the information in this podcast. However, the hosts and guests of this podcast expressly disclaim any liability for accidental omissions of information or errors in fact. For comments, suggestions, and questions, visit the podcast page at forexcrunch.com or tradingnrg.com, where you can also find past episodes and subscribe to the show. Our listeners make market movers possible.